windowsill between horizon and events, taking time to breathe the day. It's time to go out and
don't bother me.
That nightclub at the end of the world, which has moved this weekend to Boulder, Colorado, from my home way down in the San Luis Valley, about 3.5 hours away. I'm sitting here next to Carolyn Baker, who's going to be co-hosting with me, and I've been here for a weekend of, actually a jam-packed weekend of events with Charles Eisenstein, author of Sacred Economics, who joined us last week. And it's been like an amazing experience. Carolyn Baker, you all know, is the author. She wrote two books. She wrote Sacred Demise,
Walking the Spiritual Path of Industrial Civilization's Collapse,
and
Navigating Coming Chaos, the Handbook for Inner Transition.
Okay, good. I hope that's coming out. Let me get a signal from the board. We were trying to do some high tech stuff. I'm assuming everybody's hearing Carolyn just fine. It's causing a delay, we're hearing. Okay, so she says it won't work. Okay, so I'm going to have to wing this here for a minute because we are live on the air.
Do you have an extension?
I'm asking Carolyn Baker, who's sitting next to me, if she has another extension for the telephone that she can get on with this. She doesn't. Okay, so the great plans of mice and men. Do you have a cell phone, Carolyn?
I do.
We are working this out. Why don't you call the 888 number on the cell, and we will work that out. Okay. So anyway, all right, catching up here. Hey, listen, we're all improvising. The whole world is improvising, and one of the best lines that I heard all week, and this is a Charles Eisenstein line, but also Derek Jensen, I think, who's been a guest several times on the show, said, we're living in a world where all that the world is capable of doing, faced with everything that doesn't work, they do what doesn't work harder, and they do more of it. Had 13 major oil spills around the country in the last week. That was an article in the Huffington Post. Ecuador has sold one-third of its rainforest to China under a financial long-sharking, arm-twisting gun. All of that stuff is continuing apace, and I don't think I need to tell any of you or elaborate. I mean, everybody's pretty aware, and that was really underscored by the turnout for four events here with Charles Eisenstein in Boulder. There was a great talk on Friday night called The Space Between Stories, and Charles is on a whirlwind speaking tour. That reminds me of the tour that I was on between like 2002 and 2005, and he's burning the candle at both ends. But there is no time. This is the time for maximum effort when it's all out. So I've been very impressed with Charles, in that he is carrying a ball forward that so many of us have carried for so long. Now it's like a baton being passed off to a younger generation, but of course we are all aware that there is not a lot of time left. We are long past the days when people could delude themselves into saying, well, we, you know, 15 years before this and 20 years before that. And no, it's all here and it's all right now, and it's devastating. So the rooms have been filled for every event, and I've been watching very closely. And Carolyn, I believe, is on the line with me now. Okay. Carolyn is author of Sacred Demise and Navigating the Coming Chaos. Those are her two books. You can find out about Carolyn at her website, carolynbaker.net. Carolyn, are we technologically connected here?
I think we are at last. Yeah.
I hear you. This is good. Okay, so, and you have a new book coming out, right?
I do. It is going to be part of Andrew Harvey's Sacred Activism series. It's coming out in November. Charles Eisenstein is going to be in that series, along with Matthew Fox and some other people. The title of my book is Collapsing Consciously, Transformative Truths for Turbulent Times. It's going to contain 22 essays that were published on CollapseNet and 365 daily reflections on collapse.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. We've been talking. Have you been working on that for a while?
Yeah, and you gave me a wonderful endorsement on that, and so have several other people, and I'm very excited about it.
And basically the idea behind that is that For each day of the year, there will be one page you can go to and read a short page that will give you a meditative, energetic,
inspirational
for that day. And those are extremely helpful and extremely powerful, especially when we tend to get frenetic in our brains and scattered and not able to process a lot of information at the same time. I know that you've been at these events with Charles. You were at Charles's talk on Friday, which was a full house.
Yes.
And then some. Rapt attention. And one of the first observations I had is I remember about 2 years ago or so, right about the time that I moved to Sebastopol, and we were, you know, talking to people in transition movement around wherever, and it's like if you brought up the word sacred or spiritual, it was like, oh, we don't want to talk about that, or we don't want. Well, there's been, in just 2 years, there's been an amazing shift because the rooms were full. And there, my perception has been that there is an overwhelming shift of consciousness, people actually understanding that the story, and I love Charles's use of the word story, or the meme
yes.
that we tell ourselves. The story is we live in an industrial society. The story is that Cartesian science rules and three, and that's a story. People enforce the story, but you can choose a different story. So the theme of his talk was the space between stories, meaning that, and the space between is essential. That's the space that you create and hold from which the new story emerges.
Right.
So there's been an amazing shift, I think, in that point, and we could sit back if we were cynical old bastards, which we're not quite yet, but we're working on it, and say, well, see, we knew that they would come around to this sooner or later, but there is still a question, as evidenced by other things that happened, about whether that's enough, fast enough. But let's start with Charles's talk on Friday.
Right.
What did you think of his talk on Friday?
Well, I absolutely loved his talk on Friday because, you know, one of the things that he points out is that sometimes we think, you know, I'm not going to be able to make a difference in the big picture unless I'm doing something really big, unless I get the government to do something about climate change, unless I get these huge powers that be to shift their thinking. And, you know, what he wants to emphasize, and I agree with him, is this small scope of influence that we all have in our own lives and with each other in our communities that makes a huge difference. And, you know, some of these larger problems like climate change, I think you and I know, you know, you've brought up the idea this weekend that, you know, a whole bunch of scientists have said that even if we stopped all carbon emissions right now,
we're cooked.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty much irreversible done deal. So what we have then is this smaller perspective, and what we have is this inner space, this opportunity to prepare emotionally and spiritually for what may be inevitable. That's what my work is about.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, finding meaning and purpose in whether it's our success and survival or our demise.
That, however, is, if you will, in a container or a vessel, which is no longer defined, and this has to do with the event on a Saturday night, which was a panel discussion with Woody Taish, a venture capitalist, Michael Schumann, an economist, and Charles Eisenstein, who had not met each other before. And you and I roll our eyeballs at anybody talking about money at this point or, you know, or anything else. I mean, my mantra has been for a decade, almost exactly a decade, until you change the way money works, you change nothing. And now my mantra is almost, it's too late to change money. The only thing left that can be changed is consciousness. And I think that's a strong underlying theme with what we've seen this weekend. Now, on Saturday, I don't think you went to the one on Saturday, but I was there.
Right, I was not there, but I know these guys. I know them well.
Yeah, and that event was moderated by Michael Brown, a good friend of both of ours.
Yeah, my dear friend.
Oh, yeah, who's here in Boulder, and he's been a guest on the show before,
yes.
Way back when I first started. And Michael even got in Charles's face, politely, so.
Yes, yes.
You know, because Look, the fact is that Guy McPherson's been a guest on the show before, and Guy's going to be back again soon.
Right.
And I love him. And it's so clear that Guy has been suffering with the weight of the knowledge that he carries, which is what all of us have done once we have
right.
seen it. But just to rephrase, Guy McPherson has had documented 18, 19, 20-some studies, I forget, independent studies, all peer-reviewed science, all of which are very consistent in that, number one, nobody disputes that a 2 degrees centigrade rise in temperature makes the planet uninhabitable for human beings,
right.
period.
Right.
All 22 of those studies, or however many there were, say that a 2-degree change is already cooked in, and over the course of the last month, we are seeing that it's not a 2-degree, it's a 3, 4, 5, 6-degree change that's cooked in, baked in. We may well be without polar ice this summer, and all of the feedback cycles have been absolutely triggered, and they are accelerating. And so Michael said, you know, guys, you got to deal with reality. What are you talking? There is a clear talk, and it's no. And I made the comment later, it's no longer about reality. This is about exigencies. This is about emergencies, life-threatening emergencies. And with respect to Jim Kunstler, this is not a long emergency. This is an immediate life and death emergency.
Right.
We are dealing. So it has to do with prioritization of that, which also affects perception. Now, here is where I believe that Charles's work is of unique value, because he is presenting to us the option that what we do now is we don't work to change the world out there within that story. We change the story. In other words, we change the consciousness that is within. There have been some great exercises.
And you know, Michael, as I sit on your show and I say everywhere I go, you can have all of the infinite growth you want on the inside.
But certainly not on the outside. Well, I think nobody's even arguing that growth is going to be that kind of growth is going to be possible anymore. The cancer has reached a terminal stage. It's destroying vital organs, essentially. There was a great exercise today that we both attended that had to do with people telling stories about things that broke their meme. And there was a marked change in energy. I'd say there was 150, 200 people in the room. And paying rapt attention. It's amazing how closely people attention when they realize they're going to die.
No kidding.
You know,
no kidding.
that's the issue confronting them. But it was a great exercise to tell stories of little miracles, things in your lives that didn't fit into a 3D explanation. I sat in one group. Did you participate in that?
I was on the other side of the room, and we were doing a different thing. But yeah.
All right. But there's enormous power in that, just as people's consciousness begins to open up and say, you know, there are things that happen without explanation. There are things that happen as a result that have told me, to quote Hamlet, Act 1, I think it's Scene 4, alas, Horatio, there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. That's what we have to reach for now, because the story that we live in, there are no available options.
Well, there's another thing I want to say about stories, too. I'm a storyteller, and a lot of people out there have heard me tell a story with an African drum. And one of the things that I was taught by my mentor, Michael Mead, to do with stories is to have people notice what grabs them in a story in their bodies and to follow that. What are some of the images? What are some of the body sensations? And what he says, and I found to be absolutely true, is that whatever is grabbing you in a story, that's where the story is calling you. That's where the story wants you to work on yourself. And that's just, you know, the power of story used in that way is phenomenal.
Well, that also includes an assumption, which I guess I wouldn't apply to a great many people out there, is that they have some kinesthetic sense of awareness of what's going on in their body.
Well, you know, that's why I tell it with the drum. Because what happens with the drum is that there's a whole different vibration that takes place, and people get out of their heads and into their bodies even without knowing it or without consciously paying attention, and something shifts.
And that's the experience I had in the exercise today. We were asked to talk about events and special stories that had happened in our lives. One person in our group told a story of helping a homeless man and having a couple of miracles happen as a result of that. Somebody else told a story about having had a concussion, a severe head injury, taking a walk up in the woods, and yes, doing some mushrooms, but also encountering a light at the end, dropping the need to analyze, verify, or validate, but just to ask themselves, does it feel right or does it feel good? And I told briefly a story that happened to me back in 1980, just about 2 years after I'd left LAPD, when I couldn't get a job anywhere. I got arrested working at a 7-Eleven store. They were shutting me up, and I was bankrupt. And, of course, I had no conscious awareness of where I am now then. That was 33 years ago. But I was hopeless. I was bereft, and there was no end. And somebody appeared in my life and asked me to pass a gold coin to somebody I was singing with as a tip when I was broke. My car had been repossessed. You know, LAPD was arresting me. I couldn't get a job anywhere, and I was very much hopeless. And I passed this coin to my friend Michael Cladis on the Santa Monica Pier. And, of course, I looked back at this guy who I believe was an angel, and with this look of like, what's going on around here? And he said, you don't need it. He does. Your future is determined. And that was a life-changing moment. And I would suspect that almost all of us have the ability to reach back into our lives to think of special moments like that. Now, what happened with that was as we were going through this, I watched the room, and as everybody started talking about a quote-unquote miracle in their lives, the whole energy changed.
Yes.
The tension started to disappear.
Yes.
And that's the change. That's part of the change of consciousness that's necessary before us to be even able to access, if you will, other realms to assist us. Did I say that?
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yes.
And you've been on this road for a long. We're both veteranos here. We've been out here for a long time, and we have not been shy about talking about the sacred or the spiritual.
I just want to throw in. Last year, I had the wonderful privilege, and some of you people were there, of attending and presenting at the Age of Limits conference over Memorial Day in southeastern Pennsylvania. We're going to do it again this year. ageoflimits.org. You can read everything about the conference. You can watch a video of last year's conference. And, you know, one of the things that just blew me away last year at the conference was that we had some wonderful, wonderful speakers there who did the charts and graphs and all of the rational, you know, presentations and scientific evidence, and bless them all. We need that. But I had people coming up to me repeatedly and saying, what I really want is not more charts and graphs. What I really want is something to feed my soul. And they point to their chest. I want this to be touched.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you were well received there, weren't you?
Extremely well received, as was John Michael Greer, who's also on a spiritual path, and all of the others. I mean, it was just an amazing conference. And this year we're going to have more small group discussion. We're going to do some work specifically around grief. We're going to have a lot of work on community, but it's going to be kind of from the perspective of the news story.
Okay.
And I think that we can watch for this and expect this to become an annual event.
No. That event next is when, again?
That is Memorial Day weekend, May 23rd through 27th. Yeah, you're right.
And what's the website again where you can find out about it?
ageoflimits.org.
Highly recommend, and also good material there. We're coming up on the break for. We have two songs tonight. Carolyn picked one, and I picked one tonight. Music is so important because it kind of does that same thing that having these people realize that you can change a story by changing your consciousness. And so much of the work that I've done has been about how we are our own jailkeepers. We've been hypnotized and we imprison ourselves. So anyway, and part of what inspires us to get out of that is music and songs that inspire us. So tell us, give us about a 15-second intro to the song you picked tonight, and then Heather will punch it up for us.
It is the very famous the theme song from Adele, Skyfall, which was the theme song for the latest James Bond movie. And I love it because of the phrase, you know, let the sky fall, we'll stand tall, and we'll face it all together.
There we go. That's the perfect setup for the song. Here is Adele. Skyfall by Adele, and we've smoothed out more technical problems here, and we're getting better at this all the time. We're doing a good dance. I mean, sometimes it's how you adapt to stuff.
Called resilience, Mike.
It's called resilience. What was that term I heard somebody mention? Flexible resilience, or no? What was it? Rigid flexibility.
Rigid flexibility. Yeah.
I like that.
Or flexible rigidity.
Yes, and you know that's part of the paradox of all this. We're coming up on a station break here in a couple of minutes. I did want to mention that one of the things that I saw here was a new film called Occupy Love, made by I'm sorry, I should have had the information in front of me. I apologize. It's a good movie, though. And it is a documentary centered around the Occupy movement. And, boy, that was bittersweet for me to watch because I was deeply involved in that, and we all rose to that, and our hopes rose for the expectations. But we realized that our windows of opportunities come and pass. But I think this movie will stand out, and it's a very good movie. It's having a theatrical release, Occupy Love. You might want to Google it and see it. Apparently it's being shown all over Bulgaria now. It's going to have a unique marketing. It's going to have a theatrical run in New York very soon. I enjoyed the movie, although it made me sad. But it proved to be, I think, an amazing testament for those who can see it to the changes in consciousness that the Occupy movement brought about, which are very, if you will, harmonic and resonant with what Carolyn and I talk about, with what Charles is talking about, because once the Occupy spaces were created, people discovered that outside the story of the world, and that's what the Occupy, so that's why they were so threatening, the Occupy story was so important, a space was created in which all kinds of solutions appeared and were being implemented. Medical care was being done. They were starting to grow food. They rose to every challenge. They had an amazing library. And there are many legacies to Occupy that won't have an Occupy brand name on them, but there are many conscious legacies that are manifesting. And I want to tip my hat to the people of Occupy Sandy, who are still there in New York doing what other relief agencies won't do. And we have to remember from Occupy Sandy that, like Katrina, there are still many tens of thousands of people who have not been bailed out and haven't got the power back on. But Occupy Sandy is doing what more and better than anybody else can do, because they are not operating from within, quote-unquote, the story of how things are supposed to work. We're at the bottom of the hour here on the Lifeboat Hour. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth on the Progressive Radio Network. We will be back with you right after these messages with Carolyn Baker. That's the tail end of our song, Inner Reach, the title song of New White Trash's new album, Inner Reach. And I'm pleased to report that we've got one monstrously good song called Son of Your Love, which should be up and available within the next week or two, that I'm very proud of. And great tip of the hat to Doug Lewis. You can find our New White Trash stuff, including our new stuff, at newwhitetrash.com. We are back here on the Lifeboat Hour with my good friend Carolyn Baker, who is hosting us from her house in Boulder, Colorado, tonight, picking up on this theme. And how would I call this? The beaten into a state of reasonableness theme, the human beings being many now more willing and eager to change the story of the world that they live in to find avenues. Carolyn, help me to define this. Beaten into a state of reasonableness is one part. What's the other part of this equation?
Well, the other part is accessing our heart, accessing the soul. And as you were saying that, I was thinking of your and my backgrounds and experiences with 12-step programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of one of the slogans, I didn't quit, I surrendered. And this is all about surrendering more and more of ourselves, the ego. I'm not talking about the deeper self, but surrendering more and more of the human ego and the rational mind, not throwing out the rational mind so that we all become, you know, bliss ninnies or something like that, but finding that balance between the rational scientific mind and the heart and the soul and the deeper self that constitutes who we really are in our essence. We're being compelled to do that, kicking and screaming, or whether we're doing it willingly or otherwise. We're being compelled by circumstances to do that.
There was a line in all 12-step meetings, they read a portion of chapter 5 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but there is one line that said, some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, but the result was nil until we let go absolutely.
Yes.
And years later, I heard somebody say it, and half measures availed us nothing, which goes back to one of my lines in A Ham and Eggs Breakfast, the chicken's involved, but the pig is committed. you know, but half measures avail us nothing does not imply, as many people would seem to think, that 50% effort avails us 50% results. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
That, you know, there has to be a willingness to let go of the story to which we are wedded. You know, I am extremely gratified to see that. I am not making any judgments as to whether, based upon what I've seen, woo-hoo, we've reached the 100th monkey and the consciousness is going to change, because we still live in an exigent situation which says that unless industrial activity stops immediately and we stop releasing greenhouse gases, we're all going to die and there's nothing we can do about it. And that's only one of dozens of problems. A story came out this week that some nuclear expert has said that all 104 nuclear reactors in the United States are defective. Great, I'm glad he said that. But then he says they need to be replaced. What?
And what are the chances of that, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, the disconnects are indeed totally psychotic, and nonetheless, I guess it is the insanity. I feel like we're all trapped. Well, what's the Jack Nicholson movie? He's back, you know, or you know, The Shining.
Right.
You know, where we're trapped in like a madhouse like that, and yet escapes are being found in terms of consciousness. What was a quote? You mentioned a quote from Derek Jensen that you really liked. What was it?
Well, I have to change the wording a little bit because
we can say fuck on this show.
Okay. Yes, my favorite Derek Jensen quote of all time is, "We're fucked, and life is really, really good."
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Like, speaking for myself personally, I'm happier than I've been in, you know, ages and ages.
Well, you know, when I do life coaching with people, I do a lot of life coaching with people around a lot of different issues. And when I do life coaching with people who become aware of where we are and the collapse and the transition, you know, so many people tell me, I have really come alive. I thought I was alive before I got turned on to all of this, but now I'm really alive because I'm finding my purpose. I'm finding meaning in my life. I'm finding what I came here to do, and I've never felt so alive ever. And that's really exciting.
Yeah, and I'm seeing those kinds of lights in many of the people that I have met, and I've probably met 300-400 people over the last 4 days with, you know, tremendous interest, and also some people aren't attending this conference as if it's something nice to do to feel better. The people are attending this seriously, that is my impression, as if they know their lives depend on it.
And, that's what I feel, too, yes.
That's also very good to see. Now, what I think we're going to do is, before we can take calls tonight, and since we have Carolyn on with us tonight, this might be a good time to field calls. So I'm going to play our second song, after which anybody who wants to call in, talk about what's going on, ask Carolyn a question, feel free to do so. The number is 1-888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. But now I want to play our second song tonight. And this one is, well, first of all, it's a song by what I believe may be the finest group of musicians ever assembled, three of whom, Rick Danko, Robbie Roberts, and Levon Helm, are just like my all-time, they're just amazing people. And the group is called The Band, but it carries a sentiment that also recognizes our connection and the importance of love, because this is a song that is a definite energy shifter in anybody who hears it. And singing along with this song is absolutely all right, because bear in mind, as we move to a fifth dimensional consciousness, we want enough people making enough sounds in the right frequency and vibrations to make a difference. And from that point, miracles are possible. So here's our second song for tonight. It's called The Wait by The Band.
Just to call ourselves The Band.
I pulled into Nazareth just feeling about half-assed dead. Just need to find a place where I can lay my head. Mr. Shook my hand.
to hide. When I saw old Carmen and the devil walking side by side, I said, hey, Carmen, come on, let's go downtown. She said, I gotta go, but my friend can stick around.
Take a load off, Fanny. Take a load for free. Take a load off, Fanny.
Fanny, put the load right on me.
Go down, Moses. There's nothing that you can say. It's just old Luke, and Luke is waiting on the judgment day. Hey, Luke, my friend, what about a young Anna Lee? He said, do me a favor, son, I want to stay and keep her Anna Lee company. Yeah.
Take a load off, Annie. Take a load for free.
Part yourself. That version of The Wait was from Martin Scorsese's film, great film, The Last Waltz, one of my favorite films of all time. And that was the Staple Singers there singing with the band, who, you know, they were such an amazing group of musicians, and they quit at the top, they quit at the peak. Robbie Robertson's still out, God bless him. Levon Helm left us a while ago, but that was an amazing group of musicians, and the sentiment in that song is good, and it does change the energy. Reminds us all that we are not alone. We are back on the last 15 minutes of the Lifeboat Hour here with Carol and Baker, and I believe there's some calls lining up. Before we get to those, you know, it's like I'm still trying to get my head around giving an analytical linear thing. But you had mentioned something, Carolyn, about people being tired of charts and graphs, and we don't need no more stinking charts or anything else like that. People are finding satisfaction, if you will, for their hunger for solutions here in the feeling and in the heart. Am I overly optimistic in saying that I'm perceiving that?
No, I don't think you are at all. I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, I always want to hasten to add because, you know, when we start talking about the sacred, because of the programming that we've had of industrial civilization, it's very easy to say, well, we don't want to get too far into that because we might throw the baby out with the bathwater. And you know, you're a scientific person. I'm a scientific person. That's how we were raised, and there's of, you know, we all have left brains, and the left brains, we have them for a reason. So that scientific knowledge is important, but we have for so many centuries minimized the right brain and the heart and the deeper self in favor of the human ego. And people are hungry for the feeding of their souls. They're hungry for, you know, something besides bread, literally. So
we have two callers that are stacking up, so we want to get to them because I'm sure they want to talk to you, Carolyn.
Absolutely. So I hope I answered your question.
Well, I think so, and you know what? I think people are feeling the answer, whether we made a chart that described it perfectly or not. Jonathan from Philadelphia, are you there?
This is actually Ed from Los Angeles.
Okay.
Hi, Ed.
Hi.
Hi, Ed.
You know, every time I listen to your program, Michael, it brings me into a certain reality that's good, and then for some reason it's not so good, because on the one hand, look, I'm sober 7 months. I'm in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. So believe me, I mean, I'm really praying to God and doing God's will, and it's a process of letting go of these old ideas.
Mm-hmm.
When I listen to your program, you know, I have to be blatantly honest, I get so scared, I get so frightened, I feel like a deer with a headlights just frozen in the middle of the road, and maybe that's because, you know, am I going to complete the 12 steps? My sponsor said, I wish you a long, slow sobriety. And I'm thinking, gee, I got to hurry up with these steps because I don't know how much longer I have on the planet.
Okay. I think Carol and I will both offer on that. And first of all, I hear you, brother. I'm giving you a great big hug. Calm down. Everything is cool. Everything is under control because we are all here together and there is only now to deal with. There is only now to deal with. And where you are right now is perfectly acceptable to your conception of God or spirit as you understand it. There are no other demands placed upon you. I think the attitude of surrender is important. Now, fear, we all know about fear. And God, I remember when I was newly sober, just admitting that I was here seemed to open the door to this limitless Indiana Jones warehouse of fears that I didn't want to unbox or unpack. But they presented themselves. But the first thing you do with fear is acknowledge it. Now, there are three, and I'll shut up with this and let Carolyn talk to your question, because we do have Jonathan from back. We'll get to him next. Is that you might hear in the meeting rooms, fear is false evidence appearing real. And I said this, I think, on the show last week. Fear is also the way we used to deal with it, fuck everything and run. But I think the truth of all 12-step, which is the same as all mystical paths, excuse me, and it is also the same that all teachings now teach, especially with ayahuasca and DMT, that you face your shadows and your fear inside. Fear means face everything and recover. And you don't do it all at once. When you get into the 4-step work, you will be required to make a list of your fears, and that's a good thing, but then you have to acknowledge them. But it is in the acknowledgement of the fears that you begin to become freed from them. And that is truly what's facing us in the world right now. Okay, maybe we have screwed up the whole planet. Now there is a chance to do it. This is when the solutions, if you will, different stories become possible, because the one thing that fear does is closes your mind shut like a clamshell, to where you can see no other alternatives. And the whole point of a spiritual path is to open your consciousness. I mean, AA talks about living in the fourth dimension. This was a book written in 1933. That's long before any of this stuff came up. So I think you're doing fine. Carolyn, you want to talk about it?
I don't have a whole lot to add. I think you have just, you know, covered it beautifully. Fear is an innate animal instinct that we have, and it is there in order to motivate us to action and to help us protect ourselves. It's important that we don't move into it and set up residence and redecorate, but that we use it to guide us into what we need to do next.
Now, I was just talking to Carolyn before the show tonight. We were just chuckling because all the bumper sticker wisdoms are so perfect. And number one of which, one of the most important, is one day at a time.
I think I was just having an alcoholic moment. Thank you both so much for calming me down.
See, thanks for calling.
This is how we help each other change our stories, brother. Thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, Jonathan from Philadelphia, do we have you back?
Yeah, hello.
Hey, man, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Mike? My birthday was Saturday, yesterday, and I spent my entire birthday watching Grow Your Own Food videos. Because something inside of me is telling me that I should start doing that. And I don't own my own land, and I have to ask permission to do stuff. And everyone thinks I'm crazy, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. Even just every day, I have to live around people that just don't get it at all. And I have, like, no one to talk to about it, and I feel like I'm going crazy. It just it boggles my mind that they can't put two and two together.
Well,
and I just wish, I just wanted to see if Carolyn Baker had any suggestions for me.
Carolyn, you go
first. Get me down.
Well, absolutely. You know, I want to suggest to you reading my book, Sacred Demise, Walking the Spiritual Path of Industrial Civilization's Collapse and Navigating the Coming Chaos. Read those books. Do the exercises. You're going to feel way less crazy, and you're going to find yourself becoming more tolerant with less understanding. And then go out and get yourself connected with a transition group, a permaculture group, because you want to grow food, of course.
Yeah.
Get yourself hooked up with these other communities, and then you're going to feel a whole lot less lonely.
Yeah,
yeah. I did find one. I did hook up with Philadelphia Transition Town. I'm waiting to find out when their next meeting is. So that should be pretty good. One quick question for Mike.
Okay.
I read in Bloomberg that they Fukushima was thinking about releasing all this toxic water into the ocean, but didn't they already do that?
They have never stopped doing it. It is ongoing in progress. Fukushima has been consistently releasing radioactive wastewater. I mean, that is the direct and proximate cause of these, what do they call them, unusual mortality events, which is like a very scary government term, but the deaths of all the sea lions along the Pacific coast, the increase in thyroidism in newborn infants, all of which we covered at CollapseNet right afterwards. I mean, all of these things are life-threatening, and they are underway right now. And Fukushima is not under control at all.
I know.
So let me come back to a couple things that you, the first thing that struck me about what you're presenting is, first of all, you do not have to go out and convince other people that what you're doing is right before you do it.
Yeah.
In other words, you just get the permission to grow food and you start growing food. You don't, those people are going to, you know, to put it starkly, those people may die and you may live. Okay, but simply because you're changing your story. Those people's stories is, my food comes from supermarkets. My food comes from Monsanto. Well, you don't have to live in their story. Don't buy their story at all. You don't need to do that. You don't need to kiss anybody's butt to do that. The support is out there in more ways that change your consciousness to the point of, instead of trying to resist people who don't understand what you're doing, put your consciousness into search mode for people who are doing what you want to do, and ask to be shown how to find those people and how to form community with them. Because Carol and I are both in complete agreement that community is the number one ingredient for toolkit to survive.
Absolutely.
What's
yes.
coming?
I wish. I hope. I'm looking.
Keep your eyes open and ask the universe to help you out. There ain't nothing wrong with that.
Yes.
I do that all the time. I do.
You know, and there's lots of things going on. You're hooked up with us here. Really, there is a lot more activity. But I will say this, that was a great conclusion. We're down to the last 5 minutes of the show. To the panel on Saturday night, and here I tip my hat again to Michael Brownlee here in Boulder, you know, who was clear-headed dude, man. You know, leave all this other stuff aside. What's the priority? And I looked at him. He both looked at me. We said, food. Under these exigent circumstances, start with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You need, or Tom Brown's, it's slightly different, but, you know, food, fresh water. Tom Brown would put shelter first. Doesn't make any difference. But you start with dealing with those things first, because there's not a lot of time to do anything else. But that's, and stay out of the story that you're doing this by yourself, because Carolyn and I both love to make fun of the idiots. And I was offered to be the host of Doomsday Preppers. I turned that series down cold. I wouldn't do it. But you see these 400-pound people, you know, with 10 years of Walmart GMO-modified junk food stored away and 50,000 bullets, and they think they're going to be fine. Well, no, they aren't, and that's not the way to survive. And the way to survive is to change your story. And I guess that's the one thing I've learned this week as we get to the last few minutes. I'll give Carolyn some time here at the end. Is that what I am seeing is people are changing the story of the world that they live in, first by recognizing that the industrial paradigm has run its course and it is useless. It is useless. We cannot solve anything operating within that paradigm by doing what Charles Eisenstein or what Derek Jensen would say, doing the things that don't work harder. That's just not going to work. So in that sense, I'm very, very pleased. Carolyn, we got about 3 minutes left. What do you want to say?
Well, I just want to say that we really need to be in community and in relationship with each other. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a book right now called Love in the Long Emergency, The Relationships We Need in Order to Survive. And it is so very, very important that we're connected with people and that we look at all of the different relationships right now that we have in our lives and look at them in the light of the new story. In the light of the new story, what's my relationship with my body? What's my relationship with work? What's my relationship with my partner and with my neighbors and my community? These are really, really important questions, and they're all going to be reshaped and redefined as we go further into the new story. And we're all going to create that story together.
Mm-hmm. And we are in the process of doing that, even
right
as we speak tonight. It is happening. The great questions for all of us is, will there be time enough? And here, I think Carol and I are also both in agreement. There are many possible outcomes of this. And I am beginning to get a very clear sense that those people who are wedded to the old paradigm will get the bad, evil, the hopeless outcome that they long for. But I do believe that other possibilities are emerging as alternative futures. And with that, I'm Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. Thank you, Carolyn Baker, for joining me on the show tonight.
Thanks April 14th. For having me here.
We'll be back next week. I'll be back in Crestone. May have some good stuff for you. But you know I'm on post, and I'm looking out for you, and I'll see you next week. Good night.